Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, April 26th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or listening through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the red and white bullseye or the link in the upper left-hand corner of most pages that says Start Here, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book is a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That primary tool is the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for the past 16-plus years to improve the quality of my life and relationships and effectively turn any negative emotional I experience into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. You can download the worksheet process itself in a PDF file, absolutely free. And you can go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the worksheet process, an abbreviated version of that process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we encourage people to do that soon and often because that usually stimulates questions or comments or testimonials. And then give us a call. Our call-in number here is 563-999-3581. And when you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number. And we'll announce you by your area code and have a conversation. We've also agreed to do the Course in Miracles workbook lessons this year. Today is the 116th day of the year, and today's workbook lesson is part of the review. Over the weekend on Saturday, the review was, I am spirit, and I will accept my part in God's plan for salvation. Yesterday's lesson review was, salvation is my only function here, and my part is essential to the Creator's plan for salvation. And today, the review lessons are lesson 101 and 102. Today is, the Creator's will for me is perfect happiness. Creator's will for me is perfect happiness, and I can suffer but from the belief that there is another will apart from His. So all of my suffering in this lesson, it's very clearly stated that all of my suffering comes from being out of alignment with the Creator's will for me. The second part of today's lesson is, I share the Creator's will for happiness for me. I share my Father's will for me, his Son. What he has given me is all I want. What he has given me is all that there is. So on the hour, we recite, the Creator's will for me is perfect happiness. And on the half hour, we can recite, I share the Creator's will for happiness for me. In Pam Grout's book, The Course in Miracles Experiment, her lesson 116 is titled, On Behalf of Love. She quotes L.R. Nost as saying, love intentionally, extravagantly, unconditionally, because the broken world waits in darkness for the light that is you. So go ahead and love intentionally, love extravagantly, and love unconditionally, because the broken world waits in darkness for the light that is in you. And then Pam writes, for morning and evening review, the dude's will for me is perfect happiness. That perfect happiness is all I want. Pam writes, don't fret, don't stress, don't work so hard. When I worry and wonder and work to find peace and serenity and whatever else I desire, I send out vibes of eeks. And vibes of eeks are diametrically opposed to my perfect happiness. I can strive and fret and send out those eeky sounds to the atmosphere, or I can rest in knowing that Source, as we speak, is lining up everything I could possibly want or need. So that's our Course in Miracles lesson for today. And we have another 249 days remaining in the year. We'll do our best to continue with that process. Area code 813, you're in the air. Who do we have? Area code 813, you're in the air. And perhaps you did not intend to press 1, so I will mute you again. So we have plenty of time for a conversation. We have 52 minutes left in the first hour. And we have plenty to talk about, plenty to celebrate. What's on your mind? What would be a useful topic for you to spend some of the next hour discussing? Our call-in number again is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. I was doing some listening over the weekend to a variety of things. One of them was a Michael Rice lecture. Another one was a Guy Finley lecture on Sunday. And stuff from the Tao Made Easy. But someone else has a hand up. Susan? Welcome.
Hi. Did 813 call back, Dr. Tim?
Say that again, Susan.
Did 813 just call back again? I heard some noise, so I wondered if they were trying to get through again. If not, I'm here.
Well, I had turned on the microphone, and all I heard was noise, so they weren't ready to talk.
Oh, okay.
So what is your thought?
Well, almost too soon to be talking yet. It's been an incredible weekend of, I hope it's a healing crisis, is all I can say. Many things coming together from the work you started me off on last week with the tribe and its song. Michael had asked me or told me to do a worksheet or two as if I were my mother doing the worksheet. And that was different from his first assignment which was to write a letter from my mother to me. And that came pretty easily and didn't go where it probably needed to go. But the worksheet was different. But I did get stuck in a couple of points. One of them was she had no belief in God or any sense of what denial would be, neither one. So as for the belief in God, I just put in that blank. I put in my best judgment or my highest best self. And that seemed to be all right. I wish I had the worksheets with me. I left them upstairs, and I've got one hand in an Avicen, so I'm going to just stay here. But there are so many side effects from doing this work. At least I hope it's side effects. Waves of anxiety, waves of depression, then waves of intense delight and gratitude, insights into how our family dynamic has gone backwards for generations and forwards for generations. For instance, my intense wish to help my mother, to comfort my mother, which got displaced very early onto other people. And I realized that I never trusted my mother enough to confide in her. Even, you know, starting with teenage, when things started bothering me, I kept them apart from her and showed her a cheerful face and tried to be the good kid and not tell her things I was scared about. But after doing the work on Friday, I went up to visit my son to take the dog back, and he looked at me, and my son has always done this, even as a little boy. He looks at me and says, you don't look so good. What's going on? And I was putting on my, you know, I was fine, but he said, yeah, something's going on. Are you okay? And even as a little boy, he used to ask me, are you okay, Mom? And I feel I've got to do worksheets on that. I feel very sad that my little person would be in a position to take care of me, that he would find himself having to take care of me when I feel as if basically I'm sturdy and okay. And he and my daughter, he told me that he and my daughter had had a discussion some weeks ago about how they have to kind of rally to make sure I'm okay. It wasn't Tim and me, my husband Tim. It was, we got to watch out for Mom, make sure she's okay. And I didn't want to give that to him. I didn't intend to give that to either one of them, but it's already done. And I don't know what to do with that either. Probably just worksheets.
Well, and the other part of it is you didn't give them anything. So when your son is that young and he's picking up energy from you, all it means is he's very emotionally sensitive. It doesn't mean that you are putting out signs that there's a problem or that you're weak or that you need him to fix you. It's just an indication of his emotional sensitivity and his working
and
to tease out what all of these energies are. He has to learn. He doesn't just instantly know, oh, this energy is good or this energy is bad or this energy is neutral or this energy is my mom, how she is when she's really focused on a project. Or he wouldn't know any of that stuff intuitively when he's born, so he has to ask about it. And you're talking about someone who has been very sensitive. Is this the same person who would tell you that somebody he was dating or somebody he met had a song?
Yeah. I know, he's the one. I have one son, one daughter, so.
Yeah, so you're talking about somebody who is just very sensitive. And, you know, notice that you've taken data points And the data point being the fact that he says something to you and asks about, are you okay? And you've arranged that into a conclusion that says you've done something wrong.
Okay, yeah, I get that. That's true.
And there's no evidence for that in the actual data points. It's just, you know, the factual interaction is that he's very sensitive and he picks up some energy in you, and so he's checking it out. And he was doing that from a very young age.
Yeah.
But now he's also gotten all of his own layers of his own issues and his own traumas in life, and so he has his own fearful filters going, and that's probably every bit as much responsible for his asking you if you're okay as anything you're doing that's off the mark.
Okay, that's good. It just deflates some of that sense of responsibility and having done something to hurt him. One thing,
yeah,
I
have a woman who that I work with on a regular basis, and we've traded the neuroemotional technique for years. And at one point, about an 11-year stretch, almost every week we did NET on each other. This is that neuroemotional technique. And this is a woman who is so emotionally sensitive that not every time, but routinely when she comes in, she comments on my energy. And I'm just going about my day, right? I'm not aware of having a heavy energy or a light energy or, you know, chaotic energy. And this last time, when she came in, she said, wow, your energy is really low. I wasn't aware of it at all. But she's picking up something, and so I don't instantly assume, uh-oh, I'm doing something wrong. I just take it as input. Okay, well, she's picking up something. I'm not yet aware of it. And as we, you know, work through the issues or have our conversation, I just keep that in mind. But I don't assume I did something to her with my energy being low. I just assume it's something she's got a sensitivity to and something she's noticed.
Yeah. You know, along with that, with my son at least, and maybe with this woman and maybe even with you, formerly if not now, is he has, one reason he's a medical doctor is he has felt, he has felt responsible for people who are hurting, and a deep wish to take away the hurt. And he is doing a lot of good work on doing his best, but doing it from a more impersonal way, doing his very best and knowing he's doing his best and letting the rest be not up to him, but just up to the person's healing powers, up to God, whatever. So he goes back and forth now between really taking on too much of a sense of responsibility. He used to go into the ER and feel responsible for people who came in with injuries and illnesses, and he'd feel responsible even though he had not had any contact with them. Now it's just concentrated more on people he's operated on who aren't doing as well as he would have hoped. He'll lose sleep. He'll check the stats on his phone in the middle of the night to make sure the person's rallying. He'll go in extra hours to stay with them to make sure they're okay. And that's good in some ways, but it's just so much on him. It's so much on him, and he knows that, and he's paying attention to the difference between being over-responsible, taking it too much into his own sense of responsibility. So that's one thing he's doing. And, you know, we both make rather much more light of the feelings we have. I just said to him, yeah, I'm surprised you picked up on that because I feel better now, but I have had a lot of processing going on today and I felt like crap some of the day. You know how it is. And he said, yeah, I sure do. And that was the end of it. Then we went on to other things. So I've just got to let it go by and not stay with it.
Well, so it's a good thing. And you have just identified that you've got some really unproductive negative beliefs that you could explore with worksheets or, you know, EFT tapping or journaling about how you've hurt your son and others because of your emotional processing.
Right.
And that's never been the case. That's a false belief. So rather than just saying, I got to let it go, I would encourage you to pick up the tools that you have that you now know are so productive and apply them to some of those false beliefs and those negative emotions and dismantle them at the root.
You know, Dr. Tim, this work from Saturday, Friday and the radio show and through the weekend has had so many, I guess it's hydras, but they're not really hydras, just so many realizations and new understandings. And I've written two letters to friends, one who's in the intensive and could even be on the show today because she was telling all of us that she had decided not to be vaccinated, that she trusted in her own immune system and on her higher power and on her highest guidance, and she had made that decision. And Michael was great about it. He said, that's good. Yep, right. You're doing the right thing. What do? I find an article about a husband and wife, because she's in a marriage where, or a relationship where one of them wants to have the vaccine and the other one doesn't. And so I sent her a wonderful New York Times article telling both sides and also telling her I had my reservations about it too, which I did, and I read a lot, and she's read a lot. But what I was doing really at bottom was trying to change her mind, because I had changed my mind, and I was thinking it was the right thing and all that. So I wrote to her, and I said, man, please, you know, just... I did the ho'oponopono with her. I just said, I'm sorry, forgive me, you're teaching me something. I love you. Ooh. And I hope she can accept my apology. And then there was one other woman, something similar but not the same. And I wrote to her, but it's all coming from this same work, although I'm not quite clear how that all fits in.
So and what did you take most from the work on Friday? Just for the, you know, anybody who might just be tapping into this show who wasn't in on Friday, what's the work from your perspective that you were tapping into for Friday that's most important to you?
I couldn't tell you, Dr. Tim, and I've tried to figure that out. No, that's a bad phrase to use. Feel my way into it. I'm in a place where I don't understand much. Just that, I guess the song thing was like an invitation to be who I am, be real, find my own song, and honor everyone else for finding their song and allow them to have their song, not think mine's better or right or wrong or anything. And then you had suggested, or maybe it was Michael, I can't even remember, walk by the mirror and sort of catch yourself by surprise. Was that you?
That was Michael. That was in the second half of the show. I had given you the potential mind shifter that there's never been nor will there ever be a person who has more value than Susan Bingham. And so, you know, the whole theme of the show from what you were working on was, is it okay for you to have value and to appreciate your value? And you were talking about things that you experienced with your mother, who did a lot of facelift surgeries and things, and not wanting to look her age, and your own issues with how you look physically and whether or not you can see your value, or whether you get hung up on the physical appearance, etc.
Right.
It was loaded. There were all kinds of things going on in that show.
No kidding. Well, today I was teaching my Pilates class, and we teach on Zoom, and I have a mirror behind me, which is part of a big armoire. And it's very useful for teaching because the students can see me at front view and hind view if I just stand in a certain way. So they get a full view of positioning, hands where they are, head tipping, whatever. But I looked in the mirror and caught myself by surprise, and I thought, who is that? And then I thought, not that she looked good or bad, but that I appreciated her. And I saw my relatives in that person and how I'm so connected. And if I saw that, then I realized I'm connected to everybody. And I felt I had trouble getting through the class. I felt like crying through the class just to have found myself, and I didn't recognize her, but I accepted her. And what that's about, I couldn't tell you either, except I think it's that I'm not my body. My song doesn't represent, my song is it, and my image in the mirror isn't it. And it's nobody's it. Yeah.
Yeah, and the song you're referring to was that I had been reading from the Tao Made Easy, and they talk about, Alan Cohen talks about a tribe in Africa where when a woman gets pregnant, some family and friends go out with her in the wilderness and pray and meditate until they hear the song of the baby. And they believe that every human has their own unique song. And then when they've heard the song of the child, they go back into the village and they teach that song to the village. And then the village practices it. And then when it's time for the baby to be born, they all sing that song. And then major events in the person's life, you know, beginning of education and marriage and having their own child, they sing that song. And then finally, when the person's ready to leave and pass on, the whole village gets together and sings that song. And then the one other time that they sing that song to the person is if that person breaks a rule, a social convention, or does something rude or harmful. Rather than punishing the person, the whole village gets together and they sing them their song to remind them of their true nature. And there was something about that. Yeah, there's something about that story that struck you so deeply that it evoked tears. And we were talking about various things, including how your parents were not able to appreciate you as a person, encourage you to discover your song or ever hear your song, etc. And that prompted a whole bunch of discussion and suggested exercises for you about self-appreciation, self-acceptance, etc.
And I don't even think, this isn't true for my father. If he would have understood, he was a musician too, although that wasn't his profession, he would have understood that song thing. And toward the end of his life, when he had a heart condition that he knew was going to take him out, and he wasn't going to do anything about it, he was just going to let it take its course. One time we were visiting him, and we were about to leave, and I was already in the car, sitting in the back seat. He reached through, and uncharacteristically for any of us ever in my family, he took my hand in his hands and held it with both of his hands and just didn't say anything, but just held my hand. And so I knew that he really loved me, and I always did know that. So I think it's just my mother and me. And I don't even think she wouldn't understand about the song. I think she would. She adored music. Anyway, I don't know why I'm taking that tangent, but I guess I don't want to own the fact that I thought they didn't know my song. I think I didn't know they knew it, and I didn't give them credit for knowing it, and we didn't know how to find our way back to each other after all those punishments, which took place in the first 12 years of my life. That's not my whole life by any means, but by then the die was cast, and I had just left, and I never went back in any way that was emotionally open. So that's a real regret to me, too, and that has been coming to mind.
The regret that you never went back emotionally after all those severe punishments of your youth?
Yeah, I didn't go back when my mother would have been safe enough, I think. She wouldn't have taken out the writing crop in any case. She had a lot of fears about emotional expression, squeamishness. Anyway, yeah, I just didn't take the opportunity to really know her or let her really know me either. It's just a thing.
Well, we have a familiar area code with the hand up, 484.
Hi, Dr. Tim. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Ellen.
Hello, Ellen.
Hi. Hey, I just wanted to say, like, when you, I guess this was on Friday's show, which I missed. So it's so good to hear the story about the song. And when you were retelling it, I could tell, and you mentioned that Susan had, part of it had brought her to tears, and I could tell that the part that had brought her to tears was the part when you said when the person did something wrong, instead of punishing them, they sang their song. Mm. And the thought that punishment isn't necessary. In fact, it does way more harm than good. And that's such a beautiful story, that was how they would rectify or let the person know that what they did was not really who they are, and just to remind them of who they are instead of punishing them for what they did. Because I think we get so confused in this country or in this world between who someone is and what they do, which is not the same thing at all. People think that if someone does something what they think bad, then they're a bad person. And that's never the case. I mean, I'm sure you agree that most people that do what we call wrong are the ones that were the most hurt as children. And so to continue to punish them is not helping at all.
It's to add hurt to hurt.
Exactly. Exactly. And I was just noticing, Susan, how well you took over for your parents when they stopped punishing you and you started punishing you.
Well, that's true. And you know what, Ellen? Obvious as it seems to me now, I didn't connect what you just said, that my mother could have sung me my song instead of used the whip. It just didn't connect there. But that part of the story is so wonderful that they would sing and make a circle and sing to that person. Just wonderful.
Yeah. Go ahead. So have you discovered what your song is yet?
Oh, no. You know, in fact, I was curious. I would love to hear what one of those songs is like. I can imagine it. It doesn't have words. It's a melody. And maybe it has words, but in my mind, it would be pre-verbal because the baby is coming into the world without a language yet. I wonder if that tribe has ever sung one of those songs into a tape or something. The anthropologists, did they ever get a hold of one of those songs? Dr. Tim, did you ever learn the name of the tribe that did that?
Yes, it's in the book. I'm scanning for it now. I had highlighted it, so I should be able to find it. When a woman in the African Himba tribe, H-I-M-B-A,
mm-hmm.
the Himba,
mm-hmm.
H-I-M-B-A, Himba tribe. So if you want to research it, maybe you can find there's somebody that did some anthropological work and recorded it, and you might find something of use to you there, although you probably have just as much benefit if you could get your son to tell you about one of the songs he heard, in quotes, when he met somebody and came back and told you they have a song.
Yeah. Yeah, I could do that. Mm. Well, but, and I was going to add that the unraveling of the self-punishment has begun, but it's as if, you know, when you have a yeast infection and you're finally not eating the bad things and so your body is detoxing. I have been in this massive physical and emotional detox, I'm sure hoping that's what it is, over the weekend. You know, fatigue, anxiety, depression, belly aches, trouble eating enough to keep moving and kind of force feeding. But since I was phobic about people vomiting, it seems entirely appropriate that I would be having belly problems along with all the rest of it. But the belly problems are debilitating and distracting. So trying to hang in through the work, even though I don't feel very good.
It strikes me that the idea that it would be so powerful or repulsive, physically repulsive to you, but to explore enjoying yourself or knowing that you are valuable and enjoyable physically, mentally, and emotionally, that you're bucking a programming that is so well practiced and so intense. It's basically the opposite of everything you grew up with.
And I can feel that reversal happening. I can feel that the direction is turning around as if a corner has been turned or the wheel starting going the other way. Just to be caught in the mirror that way and not being horrified at the person in there, but finding the person first a stranger and then to appreciate her on just the littlest bit. I can feel that that's the right way to go. So partly I'm on just to make a report, and because it was clear to me that when you texted after the radio hour and a while later, I thought, oh my God, the guy listened to the other show, or maybe you stayed on, I didn't know which, but that's amazing to me. That's an amazing gift that you would stay on and just keep listening, and I think you do that a lot. You have this incredible passion for the work. So it's just a wonderful thing.
Yeah, many times I'm not able to stay on because I have a meeting scheduled or patients or whatever, but that's the gift of the archives, is that they're still there. And especially on a show where somebody's engaged in doing some intense work, I will frequently go back and listen to the archives to see what I might learn or see what other support that person might use. And I certainly want to thank you for being willing to do that level of deep, intense work that you were willing to do on Friday, not just in the first hour, but through the entire second hour as well. That's when you talk about, you know, commitment and passion for the work, it takes one to know one. Of course, in Miracles and Way of Mastery would let us know.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that show.
Well, take your Kleenex box with you.
Well,
keep
you
breathing.
Started, Dr. Quinn. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all my fault. I'll take full responsibility. I'll be beating myself up after the show. Don't worry about it. I'll punish myself appropriately.
No, you should be patting yourself on the back.
Come on, you said it's all my fault.
I know, anyway.
Old habits die hard. The old blame game dies hard.
Right. You know, Pam Grout's been in E-Squared. I've been listening to it, and she has suggested these exercises, one being, you know, think of something you want to see within a 48-hour period of time and set that limit of time and have the intention of seeing it and really head into that believing you're going to see it. Of course, part of me says, oh, this is baloney. But then to have the butterflies show up and the bumblebees show up. And then things start
coming by themselves. Though there's a part of you that doesn't believe it.
Right. That's very important to realize. You can set a goal and part of you is not even on board and it still can happen. So that's one thing I learned. And the other thing is things will show up, like with Michael, that book that with the moment of lift, right after we were talking about my mother's facelift, and I felt as if our work together was turning a corner, and this book on my book pile slides down, and there it is standing, you know, leaning against the other books, the moment of lift, and Michael got it right away. He just busted out laughing because, and he mentioned the facelift. I had gotten the other part. I felt as if I was just stepping over onto a new piece of land. Stepping over a water gap onto a new understanding, and that book shows up. But then I was doing a worksheet yesterday morning on my mother, and I turned it over, and I recycle whatever doesn't have something on one side gets to go through the printer again. I turned it over, and the passage from the story of Naaman, who had leprosy in the New Testament, no, the Old Testament, and he is told to go and wash in the River Jordan 7 times. Okay, I'm climbing that mountain again, Dr. Tim. It just
breathe.
Seems like the right kind of message. Right then is somehow to wash this off. It's not that deep. Wash it off. And wash 7 times. Because there's healing there. It just seems so funny that I turned the worksheet over and there's this old piece of music, this chancel opera I'd written years ago, and one cast-off page had become a recycled page, and there it is, these little encouragements that pop up here and there. It just seems amazing to me how good, how friendly the universe is. And I haven't given it credit for being friendly.
Well, you were not introduced to it. You were not taught that it is friendly and that there are ways to look. You know, there are different eyes to use to see. There are different filters. And it's the rare individual who can see those things or understand them if they weren't taught that from their family of origin. So, congratulations. And just remember that the number 7 isn't a literal number. It's, you know, that number that's often used in scriptures because it's the number of completion. So just keep washing, just keep doing it until it's complete, and understand that there's all of these different layers of messages you can take from any of those parables or stories.
Yeah.
And aside from the title of the book that fell off the shelf, did you open it and find any gems in there?
I had been reading it. It's by Melinda Gates, and it's about her work with women overseas in third world countries in an effort to help them become healthy and also help them learn good birth control so that they're not just having baby after baby after baby and unable to take care of them, and babies, too many babies will deplete the mother's health and deplete resources. I know some people have complained that Bill Gates wants to limit population and all this business. It isn't that. It's he wants to increase the quality of life of people who are here, and he wants to help these women who are really becoming malnourished and exhausted from bearing children because there's no birth control. And she talks about how they help women with lessons on good hygiene, birth control, other things. And I didn't even finish the book, but it's basically a book about respecting and honoring and helping less advantaged people, no matter where. And I'm not sure what the moment of lift is, because I haven't finished the book. But no, I didn't look at the book.
Okay, just a thought in the ongoing processing that you're doing. Just to explore those gifts, since the universe was handing you a gift by having the book fall off the shelf at just that time.
Yeah. In the worksheet in 6C, as my mother, I am asked, ask for a time when I've not fulfilled the goal. And the goal was that my two littlest girls behave themselves and give me some peace and quiet and leave me alone.
So it would be a time when she hadn't behaved herself.
Yeah. Okay.
Be asking, that if your mother was doing that worksheet, it would be her opening the window for compassion by realizing there were times in her life where she didn't, quote, behave herself, unquote.
Well, I don't know if I could answer that.
Well, if you absolutely can, because she was a human being. Every human being does things that, at one point or another, they look back on them and say, well, that was pretty idiotic. That doesn't make them an idiot. It's a behavior. It's not their identity.
Mm.
And if you look at the bottom line observations, one of them is, I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. So if your mother was getting upset because her daughters were not behaving, it's only because she has still judged herself negatively for times when she was misbehaving.
Wow. Yeah, I guess. The only way I can get to that is because you said she's a human being. She was an only child and a very well-behaved, smart little girl who pleased her parents tremendously, and I don't think she ever misbehaved.
That's not true. It's just, it's not possible.
Yeah, okay.
It's all a story. You know, my father was one of two, and his dad died when he was 6, and my grandmother, my father's mother, had him up on a pedestal. and his younger brother, who is probably the poster child for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder or the creative genius, she put him in down in the well, in the dungeon. And mm-hmm. later in her life, she came to live with us because she wasn't able to live alone. When I was 13, maybe 14, mm-hmm. she came to live with us. And every story we heard about my dad was about how he got straight A's and was the perfect child.
Okay.
Well, at one point in time, my dad, bless his heart, dug out of his files some of his report cards and showed them to us kids and said, "This is just grandma's memory. It's not the truth. Don't have to worry. I didn't get straight A's. I wasn't a perfect kid, et cetera."
Oh, what a great dad. Yeah.
So, being that she was human and lived on this planet, and she would get upset when her children didn't behave, we understand that she had times she misbehaved, and she was still judging herself negatively for that. Because if she had been one of those people who was immaculately conceived and had no sin and never misbehaved, in response to her children misbehaving, she would have sung them their song or embraced them. She would not have been upset.
Okay.
We just know that this is how the life, our life works. We know that the great spiritual teachings show us this. We know that just like there's the law of gravity on this planet, there's the law that says, I'm never going to be upset by anything anybody else ever says or does or doesn't do that I think they should, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for doing the same or similar thing. And when I open up the window of compassion for that, then the upset is dismantled, the compassion is present, and what I say and do flows from a loving space rather than an angry or fearful or hurt or confused space. That's just like gravity on this planet. That's just the way it is.
Wow. You know, you've just helped me realize how little I know my mother, how much I didn't and don't know her, except in the general way, but yeah.
Yeah, but there were a lot of dynamics that were established in the interaction between you, a very intelligent and emotionally sensitive child, and the intensity of your mother's upset and anger and her own low self-esteem issues and feeling overwhelmed. And we can only guess at what they were, but they're the kinds of things that we understand happen when a parent flies into a rage and does physical punishment to a child. It's not calm and loving. It's not balanced. It's not healthy. So we know that your mother had a lot of intensity in those interactions with you that were negative, and that was interacting with your emotional sensitivity and your intelligence. And so of course it structured how limited your knowledge of your mother would be. You weren't guided, you weren't coached to being to feel safe and to be open with your emotions, and so it's not likely that she was open with her emotions and sharing the truth of her full spectrum with you.
Right.
If you have somebody who's in a much healthier and being coached, really good coaching from a loving perspective, you'll have something like, you know, I was working with a woman this morning, and she had her 8-year-old had her first communion this weekend, and the family is the parents are separated, and so this mother is going through doing almost all of this all by herself. She's getting this 8-year-old dressed and ready for this big event on Saturday, and she is getting triggered to upset about how, you know, there's no husband / father in the picture helping out with this, and she's got to do it all herself. And so she snaps at her daughter, and then she recognizes that she snapped at her daughter. So she sits her down and she says to her, "I'm really sorry I snapped. It's the pressure of the day. It's not you. I want you to have the perfect day. I want everything to go well, and I'm just getting a little harried, and so I apologize for my harsh tone, and it's not you, it's not." Imagine hearing that from your mother.
Oh, my God. That would have been so wonderful.
Yeah, otherworldly,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
Your mother did the best she could in each of those moments with whatever resources she had, and her resources were severely limited and probably forged in the same kind or even more conflictual or potentially abusive interactions than what you had with your mother. So she was doing the best she could, and you did the best you could with it.
Yeah.
But a lot of that would have resulted in you, her being very guarded emotionally and not sharing, you know, her own sense of fear or inadequacy or struggling. She wouldn't have shared that with you, and so you wouldn't have learned it. And you also would have learned from the interactions with her and being so harsh when she was triggered to upset that it wasn't safe to share and be open. So you didn't share as much of yourself with her.
Oh, yeah. Well, I understand that, right?
You've even talked about that even after the fact, going back. And, you know, when she, one time she wanted to make a statement about something and you cut her off and said, "Oh, don't worry about it," rather than letting her make her apologies or open up, or Lord knows where that might have gone.
Yeah, she wanted to apologize for having treated us the way she did so many years before. She was at the end of her life when she said that. But anyway.
And you weren't in a place where you could let that happen. Which
no,
is okay.
I wasn't.
And yet you can continue the work, and you can continue your healing, and you can continue to open up those energetic pathways for the entire bloodline.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what you listened to. You said you listened to something with Michael Rice. I listened to a podcast that he made, he says, 40 years ago, when I didn't even recognize his voice. He was giving a talk about the work, and it was fantastic. Is that the one you listened to?
Yeah, that was part of what I listened to over the weekend.
Yeah. All of a sudden, I realized that's Michael. It's just a long time ago. But a lot of that seems so applicable right now, so relevant right now, so good. That seemed like another synchronicity. But, of course, we all need that. And so it's not just a gift for me, but for lots of people, I'm sure, to hear that again. It's sort of like that. Somebody did a kind of cleaned up, streamlined PowerPoint. Who did that? Costantino, Bill Costantino, took Michael's work and made
24 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
With Michael.
Yeah.
He worked with Michael for over a year on that.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's just, it's like, if you really want to get an idea about the work, do that one and listen to this one now, this podcast, if you need it.
All right, well, we've reached the end of our hour, and Jeannie is here.
Oh, my God.
So I thank you for your talk. Thank you, Ellen. And 8:05, if you'll hold on, Michael and Jeannie will start up their second hour, and when they're ready, they'll turn on your microphone and invite you in. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. T. I appreciate it. So, yeah, I did. Susan, I didn't recognize Michael's voice on that recording either. Jilly said it's some kind of statement that he makes now, and he said it, and I was like, oh, that's Michael. That's funny. Anyway, welcome to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, April the 26th, 2021, and our calling number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'll go ahead and open up the microphone for 8:05. You're on the air. Who do we have? Area code 805. Your microphone's open, 805. Who do we have? Well, maybe they'll call back in. So while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll just invite you to go to the website, whyagain.org. Click on the start here or the bullseye. They both take you to the same place, and you'll find all the tools for getting started, or even if you're familiar with the work, on how to go to the next level, and download worksheets, audios, videos, lots of things out there. Put the tools to work in your life, and you'll see a change. Michael will probably talk more about it when he gets on, but I'll go ahead and say that we got the – Michael had done many lessons, but there were 48 A Course in Miracles lessons that he did several years ago, and they've been remastered into MP3s, and he sent several people a link to listen to tape number 47, and I think that's what Susan and Tim were talking about when I first came on, and I didn't recognize Michael's voice in it either at the beginning, so but we are going to make those available in our catalog. Michael, since you're with us now, I'll go ahead and let you make the announcement on that, unless you want me to continue.
Okay. Oh, doesn't matter. I thought it was hilarious that Gene and I listened to about a half the other night, and she didn't even know it was me. I kept commenting. I was quite impressed. This guy kept saying, this guy's really good. And I just assumed she knew that it was me. And it wasn't until the next morning when she heard it playing and heard me say a phrase that I say often to her, oh, my God, that's Michael. So anyway, that was fun. Anyway, it was not in the line of the Course in Miracles series that it's from, but it was one that I did for A Course in Miracles group, and it was inspired by a film that I watched, and so it was a little bit off topic from the normal Course in Miracles topic that that I did on that in that series, and it goes back, I'm not sure exactly what year, but I think 1984 or so, so 30-some years, and so it was the next morning that Jeannie recognized it was me here. I had this little squeaky voice. You know, I was just this kid doing stuff. Started doing this stuff when I was 4, you know. Anyway, so Jeannie's going to put that. She got to do some conversion on it. And she's going to put it up as a free download for anybody who's who's listening to the radio show. And it'll be up there for 2 weeks, just kind of as a gift to radio show listeners. So you're welcome to watch the notes. It'll be a little bit after the show completes because she's got some work to do on it. And it's part of a 48-tape Course in Miracles series that I carried back when we had cassette tapes, and we just never had it converted to put it on CDs or to do digital downloads. And thank you, Doug Bingley, for your support and assistance on that, because Doug converted it to streaming, digital form where we could stream it. We're not, at least at this point, going to make it available on CD, but the catalog is going to be available for streaming. And it's a 48 two-hour Course in Miracles lessons that I did back, you know, approximately 40 years ago. And that was really a lot of the foundation, a lot of the root work that led to, you know, what we now have as the body of Y work. And that series will be available to stream for purchase. And when we sold the cassettes, they were $10 each. We're going to cut the price in half. So for streaming service, they'll be $5 each. And you can buy them, or pardon me, if you buy them in a full package, they'll be $5 each. That'll be all 48 tapes. It'll be $240. If you want to buy them individually, they'll be $7. And or if you want to buy them, you know, with us not being on the road, it has impacted our cash flow. And so we're hoping this is going to support cash flow growing. And so if you want to pick them up before the expiration date of this free one that Jeannie's, or sample one that Jeannie's putting on the website, you can buy a pre-purchase special and buy all 48 CDs or 48 two-hour lectures. They're not, as I say, all on the course. There's one that... in fact, you may remember Vernie talking about it on the shows back around 9/11, because or at least we talked about the fact that she called me a few days after 9/11, and there was one CD or one tape in there that was called Pyramid Prophecy. And again, it was done 1980s, so, you know, 9/11 was just a few years later. And I mentioned the date, that the final date that shows up in the pyramid is September 17th, 2001. So 6 days after 9/11. And I had forgotten that piece of information, but Bernie called me and said, "Hey, Michael, do you realize what you said back in that pyramid prophecy back 25 years ago or whatever it was?" So anyway, there are a couple of other ones, like this one that Jeannie's going to put out as a sampler, but most of them are Course in Miracles and the work that I did in Fort Lauderdale and Delray Beach back many years ago. And we've actually got, geez, I don't know, probably another 200 or so that I've never published. And I don't even know if the tapes are good anymore, but if this goes over well, we'll probably go back and publish the other, what we can of the others too. So we'll see how it all unfolds. But anyway, it was a fun lecture. I was blown, and somebody called me on using the words blown away. I mean, I listened to it, and I was just like, wow, that is good stuff. Jeannie, did you hear that? This guy's really good. Anyway, it was fun. So that's what's happening here in Why Is This Happening to Me Again, Land. I'm outside getting my daily dose of sunshine today. We've got a beautiful day here. It's about 70 degrees, bright blue skies, bright sunshine. The apple trees are growing. The dogwoods are out. Gorgeous. And we're honored and delighted that you're here with us to be part of this conversation as we move forward and recognizing the two-prong process, one, that of cultivating relationship with love, and two, that of forgiving or removing the blocks to the awareness of that presence, the things that we unconsciously use to keep us unaware that that simply awesome presence of love is always there to flush and wash through us and open deeper and deeper spaces. So the forgiveness tool being, you know, one half of the project, and the cultivation of the presence of love, you know, dropping the mind, being out of your mind, and waking up to the truth of who you are, who we all, who each of us is, each and every one of us. When we talk about evil and all that, no. The universe is based in love. The only people who have, you know, it's kind of like when people talk about evil as some sort of a positive thing, you know, there's this evil, and it's like, well, let's see. Has anybody got a flash dart? People go, what do you mean a flash dart? Well, you know, you push the button on it, and it puts out all the light. Well, no, don't be so silly. Well, why don't you have a flash dart? Well, darkness is an absence of light. That's all. You bring light in, darkness disappears. Well, in my experience, I don't care what evil people are stuck in. I don't care what hate, rage, fear. I can remember, you know, I mean, just so many times deep stuff. One that comes to mind right now, this goes back to the early days of the work, and there was a fellow who was a Vietnam vet, and he became a drug addict while he was over there, and he was on patrol one night guarding the camp, and a reconnaissance flight came in, and he was so drugged out, he just saw an airplane and shot it down. It was all his own men, his own troop. I mean, you want to talk about darkness taking over a mind. But when light comes forward, the darkness dissipates. When the active presence, and I don't mean the I love you kind of love. It's got nothing to do with love. But rather, when truly love is active and present, it dissolves, it dissipates the darkness. And so that's the core of the work about doing here with each other, and delighted that you're part of it. And Jeannie, you know, we did some more. She breathed me for a couple hours, and then I breathed her for a couple hours last night. And she got another really nice piece of the puzzle to share with you. Jeannie, you maybe want to share the fifth measure.
My fifth measure is incarnation. So it was, you know, bringing in, incarnating our being, who we really are, into this structure that we call a body, and living as the active presence of love. So it was, you know, I was breathing along, and the word just came, and I was like, what's incarnate mean? As Michael was telling me. And I said, well, that's the fifth measure. So that's pretty cool. It was a powerful session. I think we both.
It was very powerful.
Michael, you actually had in your breath session had tapped into when you were a child. And later I asked you, was that the point where you incarnated?
That was, I mean, talk about synchronicity. Jeannie had breathed me in the afternoon, yesterday afternoon. I breathed her last night. And I went back to a time as a kid in the church, and a time of really deep, deep, deep commitment and devotion. I don't know, I might have been 7 or 8, and the energy of that and the realization that came to me was that's when I really came into my body, that ceremony had supported me and drawn me into my body. And so that was the point of my incarnation. And then I had no conversation like that with Jeannie. I told her about that experience, that memory, and how deep it was, and the realization that was the thing that pulled me into my own form. And, you know, a lot of people, I mean, beings, my thesis is they don't enter their own forms because there's just too much pain and trauma there. You know, kind of like the line from the song about Vincent van Gogh, the line that says, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you. And, you know, the truth is that's what we all are. We are that beauty. And yes, the world was meant for us. And the insanity has become so tricky and taken over that people hate and kill for what they call love. And it's just been, it's a trick, you know, it's the trickster. And so it was interesting that Jeannie's session, I mean, she just popped right into it and was like, oh, incarnation. And she was really into breathing. So he couldn't even recall what the word meant. It's like, Michael, what's the word incarnation? It's like, us. Come into your body, sweetie. Welcome. Glad you're here. So pretty amazing, pretty profound. And we're here to support the incarnation of every mind, heart, and being on the planet into their forms and experiencing who we are as human beings. So I heard there was conversation. I didn't hear the conversation about that that particular tape. So I'll look forward to hearing what the comments are, what the comments were as we move forward. But it'll probably take, I don't know, an hour or so, Jeannie, for you to get that in the notes. So you can back to the notes in
right.
an hour. And the link will be there. She's got to convert it and upload it. So that's there. And, of course, we've got our whole DVD collection now on. There's actually one more that we've got to do, but we've got pretty much the whole DVD collection on streaming service. And, again, they're half price. So if you check out, if you look on the website, whyagain.org, over in the upper right side, you'll see just about the midpoint toward the top of the page, there's a link to MP4s, and that's where these the whole catalog is, and that's where these CDs will become available too. I guess they're not CDs or tapes anymore, whatever they are, presentations on A Course in Miracles, or at least primarily A Course in Miracles. I'm not even sure exactly how many of the 48, or I don't know, there might be three or four that aren't specifically A Course in Miracles, and this one isn't, but I bring the Course in Miracles into it quite a bit. But anyway, and we're on page 59 of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And if you like to get a copy of the book to read along with us, you can go to our website and download it free. It's not in print anymore, so we don't have copies for sale. Although you can go to Amazon or eBay, and there's usually several copies of the book available. So page 59, we're talking about ancient wisdom, and we're looking at some of the most ancient wisdom on the planet. I remember I was introduced to a rabbi in South Florida, and he asked, one of his people asked if I could come and present at their Saturday evening service. And so he invited me to his home and sat down and served me a cup of tea, and we started to talk. And when I said everything they would do is based in the air, he's like, okay, you're on. Well, that was easy. He says, all of our wisdom keepers spoke Aramaic. That's where the wisdom is. And so that was pretty cool. So we're looking at the Aramaic concept of forgiveness in our conversation with Richard. And we've gone through looking at the idea that he thinks of forgiveness as a religious idea, and he's got this big, you know, taboo about religion because of all the hypocrisy and abuse that he saw in his religious upbringing. And so we're kind of getting past that block in his mind and getting him to realize that forgiveness, yes, the religions talk about it, but it's not a religious idea. It's physics, it's physiology, it's psychology. If you don't have forgiveness, you can't clean up your own energy field. It's just not possible. And the insanity continues. And the power person dynamic continues. And I would love to find anybody outside of the Aramaic forgiveness process in this work that's cleaned up their power, has truly cleaned up their power person dynamics. That is, when the stress is up and the chips are down, that they don't default to whatever the power person dynamic is, or deny that they have a power person dynamic. I haven't met anybody on the planet yet that doesn't have a power person dynamic. So it's the forgiveness process is so urgent to that cleanup. So I'm offering to Richard, in Aramaic, forgive means to cancel. The minute you loosened your grip on the need for them to be perfect, in effect, you canceled the need for that perfection. So he's looking at some insights that he gets that, you know, where he he's realizing that his parents have the right to be human and therefore make mistakes. And he's realizing he expected too much of them. And I'm pointing out that in doing that, where previously he'd expected perfection from them, now it's acceptable that they're less than perfect. In essence, what he did was, and sometimes people slip into it kind of accidentally or unconsciously, and they get the result of forgiveness. But a systematic understanding of exactly how to clean up the mind, a consistent, persistent tool to be used, I don't know where it exists on the planet except through the work of Yeshua 2,000 years ago and the Course in Miracles. It's in both places. So the minute you loosen your grip on the need for them to be perfect, in effect, you canceled the need for that perfection, Richard. The result of that action is your quote-unquote parent file opened, and the abuse, pain, and resentment it contained began to release. This is true forgiveness in Aramaic. Certainly a radically different action than letting them off the hook. As the cloud over your perception of them lifted, a painful reality was in process of being forgiven, and you can now see them more realistically. And so if you go to the next page, page 60, we've got a diagram of that, and here's Richard with the file in his mind on parents. And the languaging there is, with the release of the negativity, Richard's mind can now generate a more accurate image and realities about his parents, showing that, you know, the stored negativity that darkens the glass of perception is being released when you enter into forgiveness. So that's where we'd be going with all of this work. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up? The sun is warm today. Intense.
We do have a hand up. Area code 520. 520, you're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Jeannie. It's Audrey.
Hey there, young lady.
Hey there.
Welcome.
I'd like to share. Well, thank you. I would like to share a dream I had.
Tell us about it.
Okay. I live in a mobile home, and
right.
In one of the bathrooms is a small RV shower. I've never been in it. Okay, in the dream, I put the water on in that shower.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had forgotten. And then I remembered, I want to go take a bath. So I went into the shower. I went to the shower. And I had opened the door. But before I opened the door, the drain got stopped up, and all the water started backing up, so there was 6 foot of water. I opened the door, and all the water came out and engulfed my entire body, and I felt hot. My skin was hot. I was burning. I experienced the burning of my skin. Afterwards, I experienced just absolutely no burning at all. After that, I experienced that my body was lifeless, floating in the water. No movement at all. Immediately after that experience, I experienced a stillness. And I said, I'm experiencing what it's like to not breathe. I'm not breathing. I don't hear myself breathe.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I had the realization, I've experienced my physical death. I've experienced death. Immediately upon that experience, I was in another dimension, and I was happy because I said, isn't that wonderful? I've experienced death, and there is no death. So I wanted to share that dream.
That's powerful.
That there is no death. It's almost like I had a near-death experience without dying.
Mm-hmm.
Because I experienced only life. and it is all a series of experiences to experience that there is life.
Powerful. That sounds like an awesome dream.
It was. It truly was.
Would you like some feedback on it?
I would welcome it.
Okay. So my take would be that the shower that was small and you hadn't used are the internal resources for healing that you haven't used in your life and are uncovering as you do your work. And when you uncovered it, there was a flood. If you remember the processing we did back just a few weeks ago, there was a pretty deep flood of some pretty old, burning, hot, painful stuff that almost knocked you out of doing your work. And then you stayed with it. And my take for the floating, you know, water is oftentimes thought of as spirit, that you were able to move to a still point and were in the breath, which is in Rukka, at a still point where you don't need to breathe. That's still point breathing. And that's the place where the full, you know, you go into high-speed process and you just move through what doesn't belong. And my take would be that the death you experienced was the death of this non-being self, this fear and hostility-based self that, you know, at some times has run your life and has beat you up. And it sounds like you've reached a new level of letting go of that and letting it be flushed out of you. That's awesome. That'd be my interpretation of it.
Thank you very much, and blessings.
Hey, that's awesome. Nice work. We want to touch the hem of your garment and join with you in that. Extend the energy to the whole community. That's what we're all in here for. That's what the work is about, making contact with that flow of breath through us that heals and cleanses. All right. To you too, dear heart. That's awesome. Very sweet. The lilt in your voice is so nice compared to the burdens you were unpacking that you were flushing and washing out just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you really dealt with some really lifelong heavy duty stuff, and congratulations on getting your reward. It's awesome. All right. Well, Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue or anybody with a hand up?
We do have another hand up. So it's
awesome.
Area code 805. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, this is George. It's been a while, Michael.
Young man, good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you.
How are you doing?
I'd like to say good, but I'm not. I'm in the hospital. This is the third time in 4 weeks, and it looks like I'm going to go on dialysis, and I locked myself out of everything, and luckily, Julie, I'd been in touch with her, and then I remembered your show, and it just shows me how, you know, there's an order for everything. And I mean, I'm hurting and I'm trying to be into self-pity. They revived me 2 or 3 times. And it's just been real hard. And I saw my mom on dialysis. And that's my fear. And I know that, like, I believe that we're love, and the body, you know, is only the vehicle. But I'm having real problems this time because
I hear
I've had out-of-body experiences. I've had different things in the past, and they were so clear and precise and clean. It was like, yes. And this time, I'm lost in it. I'm just lost in it. And I don't know what to do with it. I want to say, well, that helps what I can. I want to say that, you know, I just want to move on with my life and accept the way it is, but that's not so easy.
Yeah. Do you have any recall, George, of those interlude times when they had to resuscitate you as to what was going on? Do you have any experience to bring back from that?
You know what? I really don't. Nothing that I can say that happened, except I know it was really, the one time was so scary. I mean, if there was a heaven and a hell, I would have been in hell. It was that bad. And I don't know how long it lasted. But it just, I don't know. It would like, I'd be in the hospital 4 days, 5 days, go home and not remember nothing and be back in the hospital again for another 4 or 5 days. This time it's been 2 or 3 weeks. And they postponed. They did have me on dialysis, but it was only temporary. But it looks like I'm gonna go permanent. It depends on the numbers, and I almost feel like I'm giving up. And in regards to what had happened then, what I remember. No, not really. No.
So it sounds like when your physiology is going into breakdown, you're getting the opportunity to face some of the most difficult parts of your mind in your past. And my input would be that you take those parts that you were shown, and that's where you start doing worksheets. That's where you start in on the forgiveness process. You know, if you were to categorize what, quote-unquote, put you in hell, what was the energy? What was that about? And is it something that you're ready to start to engage in forgiveness with?
Yeah, I haven't looked at that. I've been trying to work on myself. I've been working on myself for a long time, from when I had done worksheets and moved on to other things. I think back to the worksheets need to get back to.
How long has it been since you've since you've engaged in the worksheets?
I'd say a few years. I got involved in. I got real involved in a Course of Love, a couple of book studies, and went in that direction. And, and then that was working. And until all this happened. And I mean, I was locked out of everything. I don't know what happened. And that's why I think with just the way it was with Julie, and then remembering you had a show, and she sent me the number, you know, to me that was, yeah, whatever's supposed to happen, it's happening.
Yeah. Well, you know, George, whenever I do, you know, occasionally I go somewhere and speak where they do A Course in Miracles, or I'm invited to a Course in Miracles type conference. And one of the first things I do, you know, you've seen me work on the board. I've usually got a 4x8 board. And one of the first things I'll write on the board in the largest letters possible, you know, if I've got one of those 4x8 boards like I had at the intensive, I'll put in as large a letter, set of letters as I can, don't study A Course in Miracles. And people are kind of shocked. It's like, well, isn't this A Course in Miracles study that we're here for? And when that question comes forward, I write beneath, don't study A Course in Miracles, learn forgiveness. You can do all the study of all the wonderful philosophies and all the psychologies and all the wonderful stuff in the world. But if you're not doing forgiveness, the study is a waste of time. It's like, it's kind of mental masturbation. Not about studying. It's about doing the work, really. And digging in and doing the work.
It's definitely a hard thing. I'm sorry.
So my invitation would be to pick up the worksheets, and, you know, if you have need support with them, if you have questions about them, we're here, you know, 5 days a week, and let's have a conversation and continue the conversation. And we'll support you. And if I were you, I'd dig them back out, and I'd start looking at, you know, some of the toughest issues you're looking at right now, and get down and start processing through them.
Well, as soon as I get out of here, and I don't know when that's going to be, I'll get home, because I even know where I have the worksheets. So.
Well, you know, you don't have to wait. You've got your phone with you, right? Go to your app store on your phone. And type in the words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. Heartland, all one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, Forgiveness. And you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. You can download that on your phone and do the worksheets right there on your phone, live. And you can save them. You can print them as a PDF and save them to your phone. And so you don't have to wait till you get home. I'd start today. I'd go in as soon as we finish this conversation and download the app and start working with it. You know, I've seen,
so it's all about it's all about my forgiveness of myself.
No, I would suggest you never forgive yourself or anybody else for anything. Remember that forgiveness is a tool with which you go inside yourself and remove the disease-producing energies that you hold. The hostilities, the fears, the rages, the guilts, the griefs, the pain, the drama, the trauma. So it's not about letting yourself off the hook, Trojan horse. Remember the idea of the Trojan horse. What's a Trojan horse? It's something that appears like a gift, but when you receive it, it destroys you. Greek forgiveness is a Trojan horse. It is not forgiveness at all. When we talk about letting somebody else or ourselves off the hook, we just stepped out of the realm of forgiveness and we're now stuck in a fraud. But in Aramaic, remember, forgiveness is the tool with which you access the hidden parts of your own mind, your own disease-producing energies, and remove them. So it's the tool of removal. And that's what you want to be about doing. So let's say one of the words you used, I think, was scared or fear around what's happening. So that would be maybe the first worksheet that I'd do, is to look at, what was my fear about? Is my fear of dying? Is my fear of suffering? Is my fear of being in pain? What is it? Locate the goal. Remember, in Aramaic, the word forgive is shebag. It means to cancel. Cancel that goal, which collapses the pained perception and gives you access to the underlying hidden energy that's impacting your physiology. And as you start to move that, I think right now about a woman who was out in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, And she didn't know anything about this work. And she had gone to her doctor, and her doctor ran blood tests. She wasn't an old, she was a young woman, ran blood tests and said, we don't know why, over a period of time they did these blood tests. We don't know why, we have no idea, but you're dying. And sent her home to die. There was nothing they could do. A friend of hers, who was a student of ours, gave her a whole set of our DVDs. And she actually didn't do any forgiveness work. You know, she didn't systematically sit down and put the pen to the paper. She was too weak. I don't remember exactly what the time frame was. Do you remember, Jeannie? It was a matter of weeks. And she's still alive, and she's back to the doctor, and it's like, your blood numbers are changing. They're turning positive. We don't know why. We don't know what's happening. But she just literally sat in front of the TV or laid in front of the TV. She was incapacitated and just watched DVD after DVD after DVD of the different workshops. And she came out the other side, rock and roll. So as you start to address the dis-ease producing energies, you can start to lighten the burden on your physiology, and physiology is going to begin to shift. So that would be
Thank
the space
you.
I'd hold for you, and then I'd invite you to stay. You know, one of the reasons for this show is because it's not an easy conversation to find anywhere in the world, the active process of forgiveness, is, you know, to find support for it. You know, where do you go for that? And that's one of the reasons we do this show 5 days a week, so that anybody on the planet that's got an internet connection can keep in the conversation. And I suggest you start, you know, with every, I mean, if you're laying in bed just waiting to get out of there, I'd go back and start listening to the archives. I'd go back and look at the notes in the archives and look at the ones that are specifically are geared toward healing. And start listening, and then be with us every day. And any questions that come up, any support you need, call us. But listen, 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 and build the brain cells and be in the conversation that's different than the one the world has to offer you. So that would be my input.
Well, I definitely appreciate it. And I know that... Yeah, people like Julie have always been there, and thank God she was there again for me. And I hope someday
Sweet.
I can be there for her. Yeah.
Well, holding the space for you, my friend.
Well, thank you, Michael, and I definitely... We'll work on opening up the site and get involved in it.
Yeah, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness on your in your app store. That will give you the app to start to work with. And
okay.
And we'll be holding the space. You know, one of the signs, I don't know, have you got any edema going on in your body?
Oh, yeah. I have, my arms are so big that it's impossible. It used to be in my legs. I have none in my legs now. Now, it's my arms. Yeah, they're... And, I mean, I had so much edema where I never knew this. I actually had the water just running out of the arm. I never saw that before, but that happened.
Hmm.
But, yeah, why did you ask?
Well, I don't know if Julie has shared with you that she bought a device called an Avicen, and... It's one of the most amazing health grades, upgrades on the planet. Jeannie's dad had edema mainly in his feet. I mean, his feet were like balloons. And mm-hmm. when we got the Avacyn, we started him on it, and we started working on his feet to move the edema out. And within, I don't know, when we first started with him, it probably took about, I don't even recall, Janine, do you? Maybe 8 or 10 weeks. And the edema was gone from his feet. He would do the Avacyn twice a day, and he was able to maintain. Well, you know, he's 88 and has been a farmer all his life, so been out in the sun, so he pretty regularly goes to have skin cancers removed from the dermatologist. And we didn't think about it, but when he went in, he had 2 on the back of his hands, and they removed the 2 skin cancers, 1 from each hand. And when you use the Avacyn, you put your hand in it. It's a non-invasive heat treatment. And because there's a vacuum involved, you can't put a hand with a sore on it in the machine. So for 9 days, he couldn't use the machine. And he was back to about 2/3 size balloons in his feet over after just 9 days. You know, for months he had been free of edema without us doing any work on his feet besides using the Avacyn for an hour a day. And 9 days without it, and he was back to full-blown edema. Now, I don't know if it would impact that for you, but I know that's one of the signs of kidney failure. But you might want to look at, and if you'd like, I'll call you after the show and we can have a conversation about it. You might want to look at getting that device and starting to use it and see what happens for you.
Yeah, I'm sitting here now, and like the time frame is, you know, the thing that I'm concerned about is because they could tell me tomorrow they want to put me on dialysis.
Yeah. Well, Patrick from Heartland was on dialysis, and he was. He said that when he finished dialysis, and they were doing 3 days a week, for 24 hours, he felt like he had been somebody's punching bag. He was like he'd been seriously beat up. And literally the day right. he started using the Avacyn, his recovery time from dialysis was about 2 hours, and all of that pain, all that feeling like he'd been beat up was gone. So, you know, who knows what happens there, but it might be something to consider.
Yeah, it's a lot to consume right now, but yeah, I mean, at this point, I'd be willing to try anything. And yeah. Julie had talked to me at one time about that, but I don't remember what the conversation was. Or it was a while ago.
I just don't remember. I'll call you after the show and have a conversation and see if it's appropriate to do something about that.
Okay.
All right, sir.
I appreciate that. Yes.
All right. Well, anything else we can support you with? Any other thoughts?
No. Julie always said, you know, she'd help me get online and everything because I'm kind of illiterate there, so I'm sure she will, and she's, you know, her support's really important to me. And
awesome.
Yeah, she got
well,
me
going to your
call today. I wasn't gonna. I thought, well, I'd listen, but I wouldn't talk. But yeah,
well, we're glad you said hello.
Glad I did. Thank you.
And. We'll hold the space for you. You know, there's a whole community of people all over the world right now that are thinking about George and sending the energy of love in your direction. And that's the master healer. So we're here to hold the space for your healing. And whatever you need to process, whatever you need to deal with to move that energy out, we're here to support and assist in that.
Thank you.
You are most welcome and, as Dr. Tim would say, deserving.
Blessings to you both.
All right. Lots of love and blessings to you, too.
Okay.
All right. Well, sending George all the support energy we can. One of the things they've proven in the research arena is there's this thing called non-locality. And in the actual world, it doesn't matter where you are. Time and space don't mean a whole lot when it comes to the transmission of energy. So when we hold that space of love for each other, it literally has an impact. So we're here to hold that space. And, of course, what we give to you, we get to receive. So, hey, we get the gift as well. So, well, Miss G, we're down to a few minutes. Do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No questions in the chat room, and there are no other hands up. But if someone presses one, we have 9 minutes left. And we had a hand just go up. Area code 417. You're on the air, 417.
Well, good afternoon, Jeannie and Michael. This is Judy from Missouri.
Well, hello.
Well, hey there, young lady. Welcome. Good to hear your voice. How are you? What's exciting in your world?
Well, I'm good, and everything is exciting, and doing my work and creating those new neurons, and I'm calling in particular to get your. I want you to text me your address. I have something I want to send to you all.
Okay, well, I'll do that when we get off the phone. And,
okay.
And Judy, I thought you'd be finished with all the work you had to do, Pinnell. You've still got the world still giving you opportunities to learn forgiveness? Oh, my goodness. Judy, by the way,
I didn't know it was
going
to be a full-time job. I didn't know it was going to be
a full-time job.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's
So
one other thing that I've added is to with my worksheet is to do something, to create doing something that changes. So
right.
At the end of the worksheet, to make a commitment to do something that changes.
Nice. Of course, that's the idea of step seven. Are you once you've set that new goal at the end of the worksheet on step seven, are you
mm-hmm.
acting to carry out that goal?
Right.
Is that part of your routine to whatever that goal
yeah.
is, you're actually taking action on it? Good. Sweet.
Yes.
Nice.
And and that's probably to me, that is the most committed. I mean, it's a show of faith in that worksheet. To make a commitment
of something. That's true.
I know. Because I can't take something away and not put something back.
You got it.
There
Leave
you
a
go.
Vacancy and fill it. Fill it with the active presence
yeah.
of love.
Right.
So
right,
important.
Right. And I just want to thank you all, Dr. Tim and Jeannie and you, and for all those who participate. I listen off quite a bit. I'm quite a bit on the show listening. And you all are helping me along my path, and I'm holding this space of love for you all, too. So appreciate it.
Well, thank
it.
You. We appreciate
everything,
it.
Everything you all have done and what you're doing. I've never met anybody so dedicated as you all, and I'm just amazed. You just never – you don't slack at all. You just keep on going.
Well, it's interesting that you know, as time goes on, you talk about it being full-time, which has been full-time for me for almost 50 years. And Jean, I've been together for 17-plus, and she was doing her work before I ever met her as well. And it's kind of coming to the point where the energy's cranking up. You know, we're in our second online intensive, and it's like now we're doing double time. It's not just full-time. It's double time. So... And for anybody who doesn't know Judy, Judy is one of our early adopters. Judy was at Heartland the first summer we were there and has been there many summers since. So we're delighted that you've been on our team. And I certainly appreciated that last trip to Heartland where Jeannie stayed here to take care of Dad and the baby. And I was out there closing up myself, and you took care of the food and were just such a giant help. Thank you.
That was my pleasure. I knew Jeannie had their hands full, and if I could step in and help a little bit, I was glad to do it. And,
you sure did.
So I know that I know my part in it was to be there. It was just to be there and hold space of love while you went through what you had to go through there and what Jeannie had to go through at home with the family. So it was an honor and a pleasure. So just want you to know that. And
appreciate it. Thank you.
You guys keep on keeping on, and I will too.
It's on rock and roll. We're going.
All right.
We're just getting
Bye-bye.
Ready to crank
Love
up
y'all.
To the next level. All right. Take care. Kind of feels like the work has just begun. And getting ready to crank up to the next level all the way across the board. So, Miss Jeannie, any thoughts for you at this point to close out? We've just got a couple minutes.
No, I'm actually in the process of doing some editing on that tape 47 so we can get it on Vimeo, and then I can get it, the link put in the notes for everybody to download. So,
sweet.
Kind of multitasking.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, it's an honor and a privilege to have so many voices raised in concert with us on amplifying this message of first century Aramaic forgiveness on a global scale and moving, you know, with the fact that we're now doing online intensives, it's like opening a whole new field rather than us physically traveling to different places. You know, we stopped traveling about 2 years ago now, and so now we're into doing more online work, and we've actually got a 14-week. It is normally a 16-day residential, but a 14-week online Zoom intensive on Penance to Independence Communication Practicum. And right as we complete, it'll be about 2 weeks before it's fully available, but as we complete that that course, it will be approximately 83, somewhere between 83 and 87, maybe 88 hours of video that will be permanently available for your own self-study. And radio show of support, personal code evaluation, pre and post the intensive, and a really awesome food program that Yurate put together, so that you've got support with fresh and raw menus for 14 weeks if you choose to shift your dietary regimen. That's all part of the intensive. And, of course, the radio show daily to answer questions. So you can do that totally as a self-study. That will become available shortly. And the cost for that self-study course will be $600. And that's permanent access to all 80, whatever number of hours we end up with. We're adding a couple of extra sessions. And then if you choose to, the next time we do that course online, you just pay the difference between the online course and the self-study course, and you upgrade. And in that next time we do it, we'll add another 28 hours of video or thereabouts, so that the course will grow for you from 84, 86 hours to that number of hours plus another 28. So we plan to keep growing it. And then once you've done the online course, then you'll be invited as a guest to every online course we do in the future freely. So looking to expand the work and make it available. So delighted to be here to hold this space with you. Invite you to create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. If the world needs it, you have the capacity to create it. Let's join in doing that. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.